There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
Our co-host Ben has gotten himself into another one of those international situations. We are certain.
Entanglement, perhaps?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We're certain he'll find his way back home soon. We are joined today, as always, by the one and only Paul Mission Control Deccant. And guys, today we're diving into the old voicemail box.
Is it a box or a bag? I guess if it's letters, it's a bag, but voicemail, it's a box. Weird.
My son says, dude.
From the mouths of babes.
Yes, but we're going to pull out some of the most thought-provoking stuff that you have been sending us over the past couple of months. And before we get started, just want to put it out there. If you want to send us a message, it's super simple. Dial.
That's 1-833-STDWYTK. It's literally that easy. The S and the T and the D and the W and the Y and the T and the K correspond to alphanumeric characters on your phone keypad, but you can figure that out, right?
Oh, yes. And let us begin with a sighting in the skies above the Atlanta metro area.
What? I didn't hear about this. I live in the Atlanta metro area.
Well, this message comes to us from Brett, Watcher of the Skies.
Hi, Ben, Matt, and Noel. This is Brett, Watcher of the Skies. I was just leaving you a voicemail to let you know that I have sent you some photos of a UAV that I took. I thought I had sent them to you in early May, along with a little letter of explanation, but I found out today that it wasn't sent. So I'm hoping you get the letter and the photos. I think they're quite remarkable, and it actually got picked up and published in MUFON in their May magazine. It was the top or first story on page 6. And my name again is Brett, Watcher of the Skies. Thank you.
Well, first of all, Brett, can I say I really hope that you got your nickname from the incredible Genesis song, from the good days of Genesis, when Peter Gabriel was the front person on the album Foxtrot. There's an amazing opening track called Watcher of the Skies that's like prog King Crimson meets like Tool or something. It's not the Genesis of Phil Collins fame that many might be familiar with. So if you're into that kind of music, sort of like science fiction-y fairy music that sounds like it could be in like a D&D campaign, check out Foxtrot by Genesis.
That sounds like a lot of fun, but I will take the drummer, singer, any day of the week.
No, he's great. Don't get me wrong. Phil's got his thing, but like the Peter Gabriel era, it is weird actually, because Phil Collins, I guess from singing backup for so long with Peter, sort of learned to sing exactly like Peter Gabriel, which I've always found a little sus and a little weird. It's interesting. That's for sure.
I just got memories of being on the beach and listening to, for some reason, the song "I Can't Dance, I Can't Talk."
That's the period. That's not my favorite. But there's some good ones in there. What's the one called? There's an incredible video for a song from that era that's like with those weird rubbery puppets that were kind of a thing, like in the late '80s. With like, there's a Ronald Reagan and like a George Bush and all these really macabre kind of Jim Henson-y puppets. I think it's called Land of Confusion. Check that out. It's a real relic.
Nice. Also, check this out. Brett really did all of these things. He was hanging out on March 27th, 2023, northwest of Atlanta in a little suburb area over there. Actually, a really cool suburb. I guess we can say it, Brett, in Marietta.
Yeah. And sure. Lots of car dealerships there. Among other things.
And the Strand Theater. That's how I know.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But he's looking up in the sky. He had his iPhone 14, and he was waiting on the alignment of planets that was happening that night. And he was just getting really excited, so he wanted to take some pictures. And let's read a bit from the email that he sent to us. He says, "It was a beautiful clear night, and I noticed some cool jet trails illuminated by the moon. I decided to take a few photos. It took a little over a minute to take them. The pictures came out awesome, I thought, and I showed them to my wife. She liked them and asked what the object in one of the photographs was. As we looked through the set of about 7 pictures, we noticed objects in 5 of the pictures along the jet trail. When I was taking the pictures, I didn't see these objects at all, but looking carefully at the photos, I said, wow, I had captured 3 different UAPs, or, I'm old school, UFOs.
I called my brother-in-law up and emailed him the images I'd captured. He is an aeronautical engineer and a highly experienced photographer. We both decided that we had to report the sighting. He said to report it to MUFON. Matt, what's the acronym MUFON stand for again? I know it's the preeminent UFO, ufology society.
I've always said the Mutual UFO Network. I don't know if the UFO is actually spelled out in their name, though.
Fair enough. Going on, I went to their website and filled out all the info of my sighting and uploaded the photos to them. The next day, a MUFON field investigator emailed me to get more information about my sighting. Over the next few days, he made a thorough investigation of my photos. He also checked with the FAA, Dobbins Air Force Base, which is very close to my house. The weather conditions and the astronomical conditions, making sure that no satellites were in the area of sky where my photographs were taken.
Isn't that cool? Isn't that cool? You can go outside, just like Brett, Watcher of the Skies, did, take some photographs, see something that you don't understand, send them to this awesome thing called MUFON, and they will investigate it for you. Oh, that makes me so happy. That makes me so, so happy. Again, you might be hearing my son in the background. He's hanging out reading the Gravity Falls Journal 3 book, and you're having a good time, Ryder?
Yeah.
Okay.
Get after your own heart. Gravity Falls is like vaguely conspiratorial, right? Isn't that sort of?
It's highly conspiratorial.
Okay. I haven't seen a ton of it, but I hear good things. I know I mention this every time we get someone reporting one of these things, but years ago when I was touring with the band, I had like this mini DV camera that I had bought to like document, you know, the tour and stuff. And I was filming out the window of the tour van that we were in over a cornfield in Nebraska. And I saw this weird, like, hexagonal thing, like, hovering in the distance. And, you know, it's really flat in that part of the country and hard to kind of gauge distance, you know. I have this tape somewhere. I think it might be lost to time because I have looked everywhere through several moves. I had a big bag of all my mini DV tapes from those days, which sucks. But who knows? It's the kind of thing that could pop up sometime. But I am convinced that it was something unusual because I can't, to this day, place what it might have been.
Well, if only you'd sent it into MUFON, Noel.
Well, I didn't know about MUFON at the time. There wasn't even the internet. I'm kidding. There was the internet.
Well, this is just so cool because Brett did send us the MUFON Journal, where his story is featured on page 6 with his photographs, and where there's a nice little write-up in there. It's super cool. We would recommend checking out the May 2023 MUFON Journal, and you can find it for yourself. Marietta is mentioned in the story, and you will see a photograph of the moon, a contrail, and some weird lights along that contrail.
Can you describe it to us a little bit, Matt, since this is a audio podcast and I have not had a chance to look at the images yet?
Absolutely. Okay. So we've got kind of in the center of the photograph, a moon that almost has a diamond shape to it, the way the lensing, the way it's occurring. You've got a couple contrails that are going diagonally from the kind of the top left, the upper left portion down to the right lower portion. And if you scroll through several of the photographs along the lower contrail, there are a series of objects that appear to be three bright lights that are close together. And in one of the photographs, there are clearly three bright lights that are there. In a couple other ones, they're almost like three bright streaks that are along the same, I guess you would say, horizontal line going across the sky. So they look like they could almost be jets following along that same path that the aircraft that left the contrail was following, but they're not. And according to that MUFON report, they don't match up with aircraft that were flying across, you know, from Dobbins Air Force Base or anything like that. So it is, I don't know, it's pretty weird. Pretty dang weird.
I think it's so cool that, like, we're in an era now where there is some confirmation to these kinds of stories, like, to some degree. Obviously, they're not telling us everything, but the degree to which the government has had to respond or acknowledge some of this stuff and the level of expertise of folks that are coming out and confirming these types of sightings, I think it's such vindication for people that have been, like, you know, cast as cranks or crackpots for so many years. I think that's just super cool. It's just another example of how everything's not entirely a garbage fire right now in the world. There are some positive changes if weighed against some pretty awful things as well.
Yeah. So, hey, shout out to Fred Kohler, who is the MUFON person who did the investigation there. Shout out to Brett, and huge shout out to Brett's daughter, who apparently turned him on to stuff they don't want you to know. And he's been listening now for like 5 years because of his daughter. So thank you very, very much.
The kids love stuff they don't want you to know. We're basically a children's podcast.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Oh, and by the way, I did speak to Brett for a while. Brett is a fantastic human being.
You're such a thorough voicemail steward. I love it, Matt. People are always so thrilled to hear from you.
But I didn't get to talk to everybody. But, you know, hey, keep your phones near you if you did leave us a voicemail, because one of us will try and get in touch with you at some point. The next person who left us a voicemail is Alan.
Ken's buddy. All his clothes fit him. Played by Michael Cera in the delightful Barbie movie, which I very much enjoyed. Have you seen it yet, Matt?
No, I've not seen it yet, but I do like me some Michael Cera. That guy, can't do wrong.
Alan's a real fan favorite.
Awesome. Well, here we go. Here is Alan.
Hi, my name is Alan. I was listening to your Strange News episode on blocking the sun, and I think it was Noel that mentioned that, what if you made a giant umbrella for the Earth to block up the sun? And I was a little surprised to hear you laughing about it, because that's the cheapest and easiest way to do it. Because in outer space, you can build a giant umbrella. It's not terribly difficult, and you can just build it out of aluminum foil or styrofoam or what have you, and it'll stay there. I think the last time I did a back of the envelope calculation on how much it would cost to build a giant aluminum foil umbrella to decrease global warming, I think it was something like the entire United States military's budget on Viagra, $18 billion, which is about 1.5 Gerald R. Ford aircraft carriers. So, yeah, that's just my 2 cents on the subject.
All right.
Well, first of all, what kind of envelopes are you doing calculations on to get these figures? That must be a mailer, like one of those big bubble mailers, and you must have very tiny. This is very impressive. I do think it came up in the episode that was a thing, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe we talked about
Well, no, stuff. Noel, as Alan is correct, as we were talking about it, it felt like, I think to me personally, you brought it up and it felt like such a preposterous thing, like the idea of just building something that would block the sun like that. In my head, it's because it would, not only are you blocking the sun from the heat and, you know, from warming up the planet, you're blocking the sun for photosynthesis and all these other things that in my mind would be a terrible idea. But I kind of poo-pooed it, and I'm sorry about that. I apologize.
Well, I mean, even if you use an umbrella, you're not blocking the entirety of the sun. Like, you can have plants in shade that are getting like indirect sunlight or whatever. Like, I've been trying my best to not be a plant murderer anymore. So unfortunately, my house doesn't get a ton of direct sunlight. So I've had to be very strategic with where I put things. And I'm realizing more often than not, when my plants die, it's because they're not getting direct sunlight. So if, in the event of this umbrella, all those plants in my house are definitely going to die. They're already not getting enough sun with just like regular indirect sunlight. So this would cause a problem, but it wouldn't like kill photosynthesis entirely. You'd have to be very strategic about where you placed it. It does make me think of those reflectors people put in their like dark colored cars. Mm-hmm. And those sure as hell work. I mean, they really, really do. We know that these kinds of things do reflect light and reflect energy. Yeah.
Now, to my back of the old napkin calculations, you'd have to make it out of something that's more of a filter and less of a full-on reflector, which I'm assuming would be way more expensive, I guess, depending on the material.
And couldn't, if you reflected it fully, couldn't that cause problems elsewhere in space? I mean, maybe that's a silly thing to think, but that energy is going somewhere. And like, you know, wouldn't it travel and potentially cause issue? I don't know. It's a spitball.
Here's another question for the more scientifically minded out there who know stuff about this. If you had something like a giant reflective or filtering umbrella in space between the Earth and the sun, if there was a coronal mass ejection or something like that, a huge solar flare that was sending charged particles towards the Earth, could you deflect that energy or would it just travel right through that stuff?
Well, I mean, isn't the ozone layer essentially a filter? Like, it's filtering out certain bad things that are in, you know, the solar rays that come. And the problem that we're having is because of the depletion of the ozone layer. So it's no longer acting as efficiently as it once did. I mean, how cool is that? Like, speaking of like, you know, Goldilocks type situations, like that our planet not only came with all of the, I guess, conditions to promote life, but also is wrapped in this like thin candy shell that like prevents us from getting fried by the sun, that also supplies us power and like another aspect of life and growth on Earth.
Nice work, science, or I guess depending on your beliefs. Yeah, whatever. That thing
let's
is.
Let's just call it that. Let's just call it the Goldilocks, the three bears in the sky.
That's a great song if it hasn't been written already. Somebody out there, write it. All right. Hey, with that, we're going to take a quick break, hear a word from our sponsor, and then come back with more of your voicemails.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring.
With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs on demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time.
You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer?
Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way.
Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right?
Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. Visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert.
Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
And we've returned. Just to hearken back to Alan's message, as we record, it is 94 degrees Fahrenheit in Atlanta, which is 34.44 degrees Celsius, everyone else out there. In Phoenix, Arizona today, it's a balmy 110 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, balmy in hell.
Yeah.
Jeez Louise. I mean, we hear stories about, like, Arizona, you know, people cooking eggs on the hoods of their car and, like, plastic product just melting just outside, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane. It's like the opposite of that level of cold you hear about in, like, Antarctica, where if you pour a Coca-Cola, it, like, freezes midstream before it hits the glass. I mean, it's wild. Have you heard the term that's being thrown around lately, Matt? Global boiling?
Ooh.
As
yikes.
Opposed to warming? I think the warming was a very generous kind of, like, sugar coating that now is, like, kind of absurd. It's hot. It's not warm. It's hot.
It's really hot. Strangely enough, in Maui, Hawaii, where there were just terrible, terrible fires,
wildfires,
massive
right?
tragedy, it is only 83 degrees Fahrenheit today, which is 28.33 Celsius. 110 degrees Fahrenheit, by the way, is 43.33 Celsius.
The math brain on, Matt.
Yeehaw! I can do temperatures, boys.
I love that. Are you doing that on the fly, or do you have some sort of calculator that you...
I wrote it in the doc, dude.
Okay. I was impressed. Now I'm still impressed.
Come on, Dipper, let's go. All right.
I don't understand. What was that a reference to?
That's okay. It's just one person will understand that I'm trying to do Seuss. Okay, here we go. Next message comes to us from Ranger Smith.
Out there defending picnic baskets, you know, from what was it? Large Marge? No, Hank the Tank. That ended up not being a Hank at all.
Oh, yeah, the bear. Just snatching up picnic baskets.
Smarter than the average.
Here we go. Ranger Smith has this to say.
My name is Ranger Smith. In the episode, you guys were talking about banned books. I'm kind of surprised that you didn't mention the National Library of Congress's Delta Library, where there's a set of books where they cannot be allowed to the public due to high pornography or other certain content. And the other thing is banned book-wise. There are books in the National Library and I believe the University of Michigan Library that are boned in human flesh that are not available to the public. Thought you guys might want to be considered about those things as banned books as well. Talk to you later. Bye.
Red banned books, you know, like those trailers that are really...
The adult trailers.
Yeah, with the big red, you know, warning in the beginning. That's how you know it's going to be good. I'm sorry, bound in human flesh, like the Necronomicon and the Evil Dead movies? Like, are these, like, grimoires? Like, what are we talking? I guess maybe they could also be from, like, other cultures and, you know, perhaps even some Nazi stuff. Who knows?
Well, it's some real stuff. It's called anthropodermic bibliopagy. Bibliopagy.
That only took you 10 tries off mic.
Sorry about
you got
that.
There. You got
I
there.
No. Don't know the words. Very strange. It's a real thing. You can look up an Atlantic article titled, "It was once somewhat common to bind books with human skin."
Where is human skin coming from?
That's where I learned about this for the first time. The human skin is just, you know, any old human skin. No, I'm just joking. I don't know. I haven't read much about this. I just wanted to confirm that it was an actual thing, and it was a type of bookbinding that occurred, which is kind of creepy. If you imagine you didn't have any leather from, like, cow or, you know, other animals that have a thick hide, maybe you could use human skin, and I guess people did. Yeah.
You know what I was thinking about the other day concerning banned stuff or like censorship or whatever? Are you familiar with the concept of video nasties?
Video nasties? No, what is this?
I thought we maybe had discussed it at some point. There is this era in the UK in the 80s where like there is this organization called the National Viewers and Listeners Association that is essentially kind of like what happened with like censorship of music here in the States. We're cracking down on violent films, and the British Board of Film Classification, they were being a bit more strict about what kinds of things could make it into theatrical release. But there was a loophole that apparently allowed videos, VHSs, things that went direct to video, to bypass this whole process. And that created this whole kind of like culture of really horrifically violent kind of DIY horror that were referred to as video nasties. And there would be these like raids that would take place sometimes on video stores or places where you could get this stuff. And since these things weren't like promoted really, and you had to kind of be in the loop to know what they were, a lot of times the agents or whomever were doing the raids would like confiscate copies of things that had like dubious titles, but that were completely innocuous, like The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas and things like that, that were, you know, oh no, this is definitely pornography. But it's not even about pornography per se. It's really more about these kind of like grisly sort of like, you know, Dawn of the Dead kind of like, you know, DIY blood and guts kind of films. And, it's just an interesting period that a lot of people don't really think about.
Dude, I had no idea. Thank you for sharing that, Noel. Wow. Okay.
I think it might be something that we might explore one day, because it really is like the Wikipedia article runs deep, my friend. It's a big old, it's not a stump or a stub at all. It's a big beefy boy.
Well, you know what also runs deep? The Library of Congress's interest in sexuality in the world, at least right around the time of World War II.
Isn't that interesting, considering what a prudish country we've historically been? That, like, behind the scenes, are they looking for deviants? Like, where does this interest come from?
I think that's exactly what it was. It was a way of keeping these things as record, but also protecting the public from them. You can read all about the Delta Collection, D-E-L-T-A, collection that the Library of Congress has maintained at least until the 60s, and then it kind of changed a little bit. You can read all about it. There is a really cool project I found online called deltacollection.omeka.net, and you can browse some of the items that have historically been kept there as part of the Delta Collection. Very, very interesting things. The top title here is Whipping Club, an account of some of the activities of a number of lovely women who have men in their power.
So this is like S&M type stuff, or like bondage-y type culture?
Well, you also have things like nudism exposed, as as told by an ex-nudist, the author, an anonymous doctor.
I love all of that's fabulous. The anonymous doctor is the cherry on top, but I love the idea of being a nudist. It's like, you know, we're all nudists of a certain hour, I imagine. But I saw an article that came out today, I think, on Vice, that was apparently there's this whole hubbub in Spain where like nudists there's these like famous nude beaches in Spain are telling tourists who come with their clothes on to get right out of town. Like, if you're not gonna be part of our world, then don't come trying to dip your toe in our ocean.
Yeah.
Matt, speaking of these types of collections, I keep doing pop culture-y stuff, but that's just sort of my thing. I have been revisiting and also visiting for the first time the films of Park Chan-wook, who is an excellent Korean director who did Old Boy, directed the film Old Boy, which is a favorite, and did the Vengeance trilogy. Old Boy was the third one. He did Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, then Lady Vengeance, and then Old Boy. He has a film called The Handmaiden he's really big into adapting like British kind of period novels and making them Korean, and like kind of I don't know, folding it into Korean culture. And he does it so seamlessly. It's kind of incredible. You'd never know that it was adapted, but it's sort of almost this Oliver Twist type story where there's like a Fagin type character, like a den of thieves that, you know, this guy's the leader and he has this really elaborate grift. And I'm not going to spoil anything because it has more twists than a pretzel. But there is a plot line in it involving erotic Japanese books, which is a thing. There's a whole culture of like, you know, ancient erotic books with illustrations that are very graphic and descriptions that are like, you know, meant to titillate and arouse. And that's a big part of the film. And I did not realize quite how far back and deep that culture goes.
I had no idea either. I love that. I love all of that. No.
You should watch The Handmaiden. It's excellent and has one of the most truly tender and intense same-sex erotic scenes that I think I've ever seen in a film. It's a very, very cool, empowering, you know, kind of queer positive type message, but also a rollicking adventure with baddies galore and absolutely stunning cinematography.
Wow. I'm just over here getting excited to read Sex Control, Curious Customs of Medieval Times. Sorry.
No, good. Please.
There's so many.
It's important to enrich ourselves with this stuff. And, you know, we think of the past as being inherently like prudish, like I was saying about, but that's sort of more of a modern construct or a thing that religion sort of, you know, created, I guess, you know, taking, but all of these things just kind of went underground. And honestly, people in the past were even hornier than we are, man. And like, really, you know, figured out interesting ways to use the stuff they had to get frisky.
Yes, definitely. Let's break from this one. Thank you so much for that message, Ranger Smith. Let us jump over to Frank.
Can I just say this is my favorite nickname in the history of nicknames, I think, for this show.
You know what? I think I agree.
Hey, guys. This is codename Frank Lloyd Wrong. There is a program in the sustainable building world for the effort of making buildings more green and sustainable called the LEED program, spelled L-E-E-D. And while on the surface, it seems like a very good program to support the sustainable architecture and development of buildings, there's a little bit of a darker side to it. Buildings a lot of times can get tax cuts or different reimbursements for following LEED guidelines or getting their building LEED certified. And these certifications are based on things like whether you have a green roof or solar panels or things like electrical vehicle parking spots and charging stations. But I guess the dark side of it is that a lot of buildings will kind of cheat the system and get the LEED certification even though they are not any more sustainable than most other buildings. For example, there's a lot of buildings on the Las Vegas Strip that are lit up like Christmas trees and found to be way less efficient than regular buildings, but by doing little things like having a certain number of electrical vehicle spots or just little things here and there, they can get that LEED certification. So kind of interesting that some of these guys are cheating this system a little bit. And I'm sure you guys have seen it, the orb or the ball that they're building in Las Vegas, I think, that you guys might have seen pictures of that looks kind of creepy and kind of cool at the same time. I think will probably be one of these buildings as well. Once again, keep up the great work. Love the show. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Is the orb the thing that can like project crazy stuff like in like a kind of a dome thing that you can like see from like the air?
Yeah, my understanding is that it's a venue inside that thing. And then on the exterior of it, yeah, you can turn it into a giant eyeball or a snow globe or, you know, a promo for a boxing match, whatever you need.
But is it like three-dimensional? Is it like actually like a hologram? I saw a thing that somebody, it was definitely faked. It was like somebody, you know, went to town with CGI on it, but it was like literally looking like a giant hand or something. But it's not done yet, right? Like, so these things aren't actually being projected, but I'm trying to understand how close to the crazy over-the-top version that this person made it will it actually be.
Well, Okay, maybe I'm wrong, guys, but I thought it's called the Sphere at the Venetian Resort. And my under... Oh, it is a venue. Yeah, here we go. 580,000 square feet of programmable LED panels.
I see it. Yeah.
It's actual LEDs.
It's not a hologram. It just it's constrained by the surface area of the thing, but it can like, yeah, it can be a giant eye. It can be, you know, but it can't like shoot out crazy like Blade Runner holograms beyond the bounds of this Epcot kind of thing, but wild. And so, okay, are we to say that we are surprised that people that make their money from building things as quickly and cheaply as possible are trying to save money and doing it maybe illegally?
Well,
it's not illegal though. It's a loophole. That's the, you know, it's all about like the law is sort of, you know, irrelevant here because it's so easy to find these loopholes. And it just goes to show how inefficient some of these certifications are, sort of toothless and meaningless because you can offset it in so many other ways.
Well, this gets so murky. Some of this stuff, the greenification of different things that have not been, quote, green for a long time, right? Changing practices like building practices or building vehicles and how fuel efficient they are, all of these things. It does feel like over time we've seen cheaters, you know, who try and cheat the whole system, like that one car company.
The Deutsche one?
The Volkswagen one.
Yes, yes, yes.
Where... people attempted,
cheater box. It's my cheater box.
Well, people attempted to cheat the system to, you know, meet minimum requirements in order to do things like being able to continue selling their product or to get certain tax breaks, right? So that creating and selling your product can be affordable and you can make enough of a profit.
The Volkswagen thing was like totally illegal though. And they were, you know, cheating the system in a way that was not even like following the loophole rule. Like they went above and beyond by installing a thing that was meant to be a secret. But we just know that even with like carbon offsets and like the idea of like, how do we, you know, act like we're being good stewards of the environment while being able to continue to operate business as usual. You know, that's the kind of stuff that I think is most galling because you're going to have folks that are like brazenly breaking the rules, but the rules in general are kind of not really doing a whole hell of a lot, or there's always a way to kind of figure out how to get around it.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't even see what LEED is, by the way, what it stands for. It is all caps LEED. It's an acronym, stands for Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design.
That sounds nice.
Everywhere I've looked, it is a worldwide program. So it's not just in the U.S., not just any, you know, any one town, one city, one state or country. You can get LEED certified pretty much anywhere where you're doing construction or, you know, some kind of fixing of a building, updating of a building.
Remember our previous office? They had a thing where in order to get certain certifications, they had to kill the air conditioning in the whole office space, like after like 4 or 5 o'clock or whatever. And
yeah.
It was not on at all on the weekends. That was specifically to get some kind of tax break or certification. And it sucked when we were there. I mean, I'm all about, you know, saving energy and all of these things, but little stuff like that seems to me to be more saving them on their heating, on their cooling bill than it is to actually like do any kind of like big picture, you know, positive change for the environment. But maybe I'm wrong.
No, it's everything. And that is great. It's everything like that. Energy efficiency, water efficiency, materials that are being used in creating the project. I mean, that's really some of the main things. But I think what Frank Lloyd Wrong is pointing to is that you can kind of mess up your energy efficiency and it can be pretty crap. But if you put in enough,
right,
you know, as you said,
yeah,
electric
chargers,
charging,
whatever,
you
yeah
know, stations,
like,
then
what
you
we did
can
over
offset
here. Don't look at any of this stuff over here, though. It's yeah.
Well, it's like it's this concept of carbon offsetting, right, where I can generate a ton of pollution as a company. But if I pay a bunch of money and offset my carbon by, you know, investing in this other stuff or doing these other things, then my carbon gets canceled out. Only it doesn't, not really, which is kind of weird.
even certain municipalities have like regulations in place that at the end of the day are kind of just inconvenient to like homeowners. You know, I had an issue where my water was in the wrong name with this house that I bought a little over a year ago, and my water got cut off. And in order to get it cut back on, I had to have, they wouldn't just cut it back on. They had to send somebody to inspect my fixtures and like my toilet and make sure it was like a low flow toilet. When I bought the house, I saw the toilets had the little, you know, two for poo, one for pee or yeah, whatever buttons. I just thought that was like a cool modern update, but those are like mandated here.
Oh, really?
In Atlanta. Yeah. And like they had to come check, make sure those were installed. And they also like, they even to pass us, he kind of like did it on the hush hush, but switched out our shower head to one that he had on him so he could take a picture of it and then like gave us the shower head back.
But don't tell those secrets.
I'm not doxing the guy. I'm just saying these little things, they don't ultimately amount to a hell of a lot except for like more red tape and like, you know, a pain in the butt for like the small guys like me and you. But the big companies, they can get around doing it in so many ways, you know? It's sad.
I had an uncle-in-law once tell me the secret of removing all the what was it, the water suppression that's going on in your house on all your faucets. He's like, you can take it all off and you get as much water in your shower as you want, man.
You mean for like water pressure?
Yeah. To get crazy water pressure in your shower. It was there are apparently tricks to do that, but I don't want to waste the water.
Well, no. I mean, again, water, we know, we talk about this all the time on this show, is probably going to be one of the big bones of contention in like a situation leading to some future, you know, Mad Max type war, you know, in terms of like who controls the water resources. That is something we absolutely need. And we see water disputes all the time between, you know, states that share water supplies and all of that. And as we know, you know, if there is, it's, I mean, I guess there's, is there more water being made? Is there a finite amount of water?
Oh yeah, dude.
Can't you synthesize water?
We're producing water.
With the H and the two and the O, isn't that a thing you can do or no? I don't know.
Oh yeah, dude. We're producing water all over this place with these desalination plants. No, I'm just joking. It is really expensive to do that apparently and difficult. So we've talked about that before in the past. Like, why don't we just have desalination plants everywhere? No, it's not as easy as that. Apparently.
I am being a bit of a dum-dum, and I'm not joking. Like, is it all from like the water cycle and like, you know, rain and like things like moving through the ecosystem? Like, if rain stops happening, is water inevitably going to dry up? Like, is it all just based on the balance of like these systems kind of, and we're depending on them and the temperature and the global conditions being right? And if something screwed it up, is it going to go real, real wrong?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, it's all one connecting system, right? And there are ways, there's technology, and we've figured out ways to, I guess, get like pull more water from the air, right? Through the humidity. If you think about something like a dehumidifier, how does that work? It pulls the humidity out of the air. It pulls humidity out of the air and it turns it into liquid water in a reservoir, right? So theoretically, you could do that.
It did say in the instructions for my dehumidifier not to drink the water that is produced in the little trough or whatever. But then it goes back to things like gray water, you know, where you can use gray water for certain things. You wouldn't want to drink it or bathe in it, but you can use it to like water plants and things like that.
Now, look, I don't know this for sure. I would speculate that that warning is more about the receptacle where the water goes and how it just sits there. Because theoretically, that is distilled water, and it would be some of the cleanest water you could have access to right now because it's literally just water pulled directly out of the air. If you could find a way to make sure the receptacle was always clean, then that water would be super drinkable in my head. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry. That's my understanding of how dehumidifiers work.
At the very least, surely there would be a way to purify it or to like filter it or to run it through something in a pinch, right? Mm-hmm. Like I always think of Waterworld where they pee into the thing and they drink it. That's not real. But I recently had some landscaping work done in my backyard and I installed what's called a rain garden. It's these giant, they're called burns, and they're these sort of like pits where there's a tree planted in the middle of it, but they're these two sort of mulchy kind of like pits, and they're not ugly. They look nice, but they fill up with water, and there's a rain garden registry, which I'm a part of. And apparently rain gardens put an insane amount of water back into the water table that would normally just go to runoff or like go, you know, down storm drains and stuff and become useless. So that's me doing my part, y'all. I'm going to drink my humidifier water and use my rain garden. Matt told me it was okay to drink my
dehumidifier.
Yeah, no, I heard what I heard.
If it's truly distilled and it is it's clean. Okay, let's take another break. We'll come right back with just a few more messages from you.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring.
With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs on demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time.
You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer?
Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way.
Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right?
Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. Visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert.
Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Okay, we are back. And this is a message we got from Tim. And it does come with a warning. Sorry to do this, you know, towards the end of an episode, but sometimes we get suggestions from you that are a little tougher than others. This is a really, it's a messed up story. It's horrifying, actually, and it's worth our time because it is disturbing. It deserves more attention because a lot of people don't know about it, and we're going to talk about it. But just a little warning, this is a message from Tim that is going to upset you. Here we go.
Hi, my name's Tim. I live in Michigan. Grew up sailing in the Great Lakes. Jeffrey Epstein wasn't the first person to run an island of underage children. Fox Islands in Michigan, a gentleman named Sheldon from the Detroit area bought them and turned them into a child porn video ring. He got busted and got into a bunch of trouble. Kind of interesting reading about it. It's even more interesting when you start looking at pictures of the island today, because they're still sitting there with a bunch of the buildings on them. Built an airstrip. Basically just shuttle kids back and forth to film them having sex. Well, it's pretty f***ed up. Anyways, I live in Traverse City. I've always found this case to be kind of interesting, and you guys may have covered it at one point, but pretty f***ed up. They also tie him to the child murders of this time. There's four missing children in the Detroit area. They may have tied it to somebody else officially, but there was a lot of speculation for a long time. Made for a good story. Have a good night. Don't do anything I wouldn't do. Bye.
Okay.
I do not know this story at all.
Okay.
It sounds like something out of a Girl with the Dragon Tattoo type, you know, crime fiction situation. That is insane.
Yeah, it does sound a lot like that. This is something Noel, I know Ben and I have had conversations about, and I want to say we've talked about it briefly in the past, but when I was looking through all of our records, I couldn't find a specific story, like a video, a podcast episode. What Tim is mentioning here is a place, a physical place called North Fox Island that you can find in Michigan. And there's also South Fox Island just below it. This was a private island for a time, and it was owned by the person Tim mentioned, Mr. Francis Duffield, D-U-F-F-I-E-L-D, Sheldon, S-H-E-L-D-E-N. And there was a documentary that was made on, what was that, Investigation Discovery, ID Discovery, I think is what it was called for a while. There is a, I think it's a two-part series titled Children of the Snow, S-N-O-W. You can find that. It was produced, gosh, I want to say back in 2019, maybe. It might have even been created in 2018. But it's a pretty extensive accounting of what this person was doing on that island and a breakdown of the other child murders. There were, as Tim said, there were child murders in the same area where this child exploitation, like abuse, terror generation machine was functioning, run by this person, Sheldon. At least allegedly. I guess you have to say allegedly, because the guy ended up escaping. This is why it's so horrifying and messed up.
I missed this. When is this? What era is this meant to have taken place?
This is 1970s, I want to say. Maybe 60s as well. I think it's right around the time of the Atlanta Missing and Murdered stuff, too. This is really crazy. Okay, so let's read from a local newspaper there in Traverse City. This is the Traverse City Record Eagle. You can find this article right now if you check it out. The title is Children of the Snow Uses DNA to Shed Light on Cold Oakland County Case. And it was published February 19th, 2019.
All right, I'll read a bit. Sheldon was a land developer, oil consultant, market investor, and author who never married. He was the sole owner of North Fox Island. The island is now owned by the state of Michigan and is part of the Beaver Island State Wildlife Research Area. The pedophile ring included well-to-do businessmen, politicians, and other rich and powerful men who would take children to the island to have sex with them and make films that were distributed around the world, as the story goes. Jesus.
Yeah, right. So according to the Traverse City Record Eagle, Sheldon and others were able to attract children through his brother Paul's children's mission.
Like a religious organization.
Mm-hmm. And a supposed nature camp for, quote, underprivileged children that was on the island. Many people, according to the paper here, saw Francis Sheldon as a generous benefactor who took youths on hunting trips to the island, skiing trips in Aspen, and beach parties at his family's estate in the Caribbean.
This is True Detective season one, man. Like, so they must have been aware of the story, like all of the aspects, the attracting, using a benevolent, you know, forward-facing organization.
Oh yeah, and it also sounds so familiar to me. That's why it's like weirding me out. Feels like I've talked about this, or at least we wanted to talk about it, but maybe it was too dark for one reason or another at some point, or I don't know. But we need to talk about it further, because this guy also set up trust funds for these kids that he abused, for several of them, at least. Let's get just to the end of this article here to find out why we should all be really mad.
Search warrants and an arrest warrant for criminal sexual conduct were issued for Sheldon in 1976, but Sheldon had already cleared out his Ann Arbor home and his cabin on North Fox, apparently prompted by the arrest of an associate, Gerald S. Richards, on criminal sexual conduct charges. Sheldon fled to the Netherlands, which at the time rarely extradited those wanted for crimes in the United States. He was reported dead in 1996, but some think he may have established a new identity and continues to operate as a pedophile. He would be 80 or 81 today. I mean, if there's someone that could arrange these types of things, Matt, it's someone like this. I mean, let's just go back to the laundry list. Land developer, oil consultant, market investor. I mean, I see what you mean about the anger. I mean, it's all absolutely rage-inducing, but the idea that someone could get tipped off potentially by the authorities or someone who's part of this ring and then just figure out how to disappear and set up shop somewhere else, you know?
According to Tim, I talked to Tim, by the way, on the phone, and according to him and according to that documentary that was produced and from, you know, a lot of the reporting on this, we're talking about very wealthy, powerful individuals that were taking part in this thing, allegedly. And that means if you've got, you know, a ringleader like this person, Sheldon, who is rich and powerful, and all the people working with him are rich and powerful, it means you probably would get tipped off and you maybe could fly either privately or secretly to the Netherlands and then stay there for 20 years and never have to face consequences. And that it's infuriating, and it makes you want to bring the Batman out, right? The Batman inside all of us. We're not billionaires, unfortunately.
No, but it's like this level of ability to skirt the law due to power and influence can only ever be matched by vigilantism, unfortunately, because the system just isn't designed to catch these people. Well, you're at a certain level of influence. You've got people within the system in your pocket, you know? And I mean, I'm not to say that everyone in politics or everyone, you know, in law enforcement is some sort of psychotic pedophile. It's certainly not the case, but all you need is one or two, you know, people that have your back and can give you the heads up. And we know that happens. It happens.
All that has to happen is there needs to be a network of money, right? And we're talking about donations, like campaign donations, something like that, that gets started at one small level and moves its way up. And now everybody's connected. And no powerful politician that has nothing to do with this wants to be involved with somebody who is involved with this stuff through a campaign donation, which means you kind of get somebody on a hook. If, you know, let's say you're a powerful person that finds out you just got, you know, your campaign got supported heavily by someone taking part in something like this. Would you want anyone to know? Probably not. Maybe you would help cover it up.
Money.
Yeah. But again, that's all alleged. That's all theoretical. Everything I just said, it's just, you could feel that something like that might be true. One last thing I want to say about this, Noel, there's a huge FBI vault entry for this. That's vault.fbi.gov. Talks about Francis Sheldon, and it's just all kinds of intel that they've got on this person, conversations with other people about him, some what appears to be some spying that was done on this guy, just lots of information gathering. There's a connection to someone that popped up in our research for that Abscam episode, a guy named Adam Aristotle Starchild, aka Malcolm McConaughey. And this is very weird, Noel. It's a weird connection, and it makes me feel like this ring is not just isolated there to the Great Lakes, to the Detroit area, and, you know, to Traverse City, Michigan.
I mean, I would imagine that things of this, if you figured out how to make it work to this degree, why wouldn't there be people from international people involved? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, this is the you're in the catbird seat. If you're a freaking pedophile, this is like where you want to be. You know, this is like the kind of stuff that Epstein was involved in. This is just worse. Well, is it worse? I think it's worse.
This is worse. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to say.
It's hard.
In my mind, it's worse because it's kids. It's filmed. It's sold. There are other people around, you know, the world that were watching this stuff, and they were stakeholders basically in this ring, this horrifying evil thing. But let's stay here with this Abscam connection, because I found this fascinating. I stumbled on this through the Wikipedia entry for Adam Starchild, this guy, Malcolm McConaughey. I'm just going to read directly from this. Quote, in 1977, the Traverse City Record Eagle, the one we just read from, that same local paper, reported that this guy, Starchild, was involved in a number of supposed charitable organizations funded by a wealthy Michigander, Francis Duffield, Sheldon. Here are those things. The Church of the New Revelation of Kearney, that's in New Jersey. Brother Paul's Children's Mission on North Fox Island, that's the one we just mentioned. The Educational Foundation for Youth of Illinois, and the Ocean Living Institute of New Jersey. The last allegedly devoted to underwater habitats, agriculture, ocean architecture, and ocean law, which were said to be tax dodges and fronts for sexual activity involving boys. So that's in New Jersey and in Illinois, in Michigan. It looks as though, it sounds as though, again, if you're, we're going by a Wikipedia article here that's, you know, based off of writing from the Traverse City Record Eagle, but it seems as though this operation was huge.
Certainly does, Matt. Please tell me you've got something a little lighter to wrap this. I mean, important, 100%. This stuff is absolutely, you know, critical to understand that this kind of evil exists in the world, but would love a little palate cleanser after that one. Thank you so much to the listener that wrote it. I mean,
yeah. No, you're right. Thank you, Tim. You're absolutely right, Noel. We do have a palate cleanser. We've got a message here from Zach to end the episode. We love messages like all of these that we've listened to today. Thank you so much to everybody who sent them in. In particular, lately, messages like the one we're about to play from Zach have been extremely helpful for us to come up with new ideas for, like, what could we cover? What's interesting? What, you know, what's in your neck of the woods? What should we be thinking about? So again, Tim as well, we need to be talking about this. We're going to talk about it. But here is Zach's message.
Hi, this is Zach. I'm originally from Alaska, and I wondered if you guys had any idea just how many wild myths, legends, and other weird stories there are. There is a local legend in Anchorage, Alaska, of a theater at the university called the Wendy Williamson Auditorium that has some wild ghost stories. We also have our own lake monster. We have our own triangle where people get lost, disappear, etc. And quite a few rather unique UFO sightings. Native Alaskans also have this legend of tiny men that bring really bad luck along with them. I think it would be a great episode. I hope you guys do awesome, and you know, watch your backs, because they don't want you to know.
We love some regional lore. It's
we
true.
Really do. Well, it's just lighthearted enough to, you know, to be fun. It's a little ghost haunting, we can handle that. It makes me want to travel to Alaska, though.
God, Ben spent some time, and super producer Paul Mission Control Deccan spent some time in Alaska for the Missing series. Wonder if those fellas heard anything about this stuff. I mean, they were probably slammed getting podcast audio, but no, I've never. It makes sense being such a. It's an unusual place, you know, the way it stays light out like all the time. There's certain otherworldly qualities about Alaska for sure. So, and it's not exactly a lot going on. So it makes sense that there would be, you know, stories that would develop over time, you know, through like the oral tradition.
Oh, yeah. Well, I want to go. And Paul, you won't have to rent a boat this time. I think that was the biggest headache, at least from my discussions with you and Ben. We got to do that. Check out Alaska's lore. We want to do more travel. So if we've got an excuse to go somewhere as a show, we're going to take it. Why not give us some cool excuses for us to give our bosses, or like reasons to travel? It would be awesome. Let's do that.
You can find us. You know where you can find us, on the internet. We exist at the handle Conspiracy Stuff on Facebook and the social media platform formerly known as Twitter, and YouTube. That's Conspiracy Stuff. We're Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram and TikTok.
Yes. If you want to call us like everybody in today's episode did, call 1-833-STDWYTK. It's a voicemail system. It comes directly to us, but you won't get to talk to us in that moment. You can just leave 3 minutes worth of the coolest stuff you want to say. Give yourself a great nickname and let us know in that message if we can use your voice and message on one of these episodes.
And if you leave a couple of pennies under your pillow, you might get a call from the Matt Frederick Fairy. That's
yeah,
a thing.
Put the number in your phone if you don't mind as a contact, just in case, because we do call back sometimes. Thank you so much to Tim from Michigan, Zach, Frank Lloyd Wrong, Ranger Smith, Alan, and Brett, Watcher of the Skies. Thanks so much for reaching out to us. If you don't want to use the phone, you don't like social, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Attention, true crime enthusiast, searching for a way to unwind after diving deep into the mysteries that keep you up at night? Look no further.
Introducing Lazarus Naturals, your trusted companion for CBD relief. With a commitment to transparency, Lazarus Naturals oversees every step from farm to doorstep, ensuring purity and quality you can trust.
Visit LazarusNaturals.com today and discover how CBD can help you decompress and recharge for your next investigation.
That's LazarusNaturals.com.
Lazarus Naturals, your partner in unraveling the mysteries of true crime.
Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.